Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, welcome to the Savage Nation. All I can ask you is, what headlines would you like to have seen in your morning newspaper that the people in the media are afraid or don't even understand needs to be printed? That's number one. I'm going to read you some headlines from the Daily News, the New York Times, the New York Post, to show you the kind of garbage that they're covering. A movie actor got a divorce because he was found in a car with another woman. Some goon with a basketball with a tattoo running down his face was caught doing this. You get the picture. But no one is talking about the $1 billion that was given away on Wednesday by Obama to Democratic donors for more solar projects that will no doubt produce very little in electricity. Plain and simple, graft and corruption on a scale unknown in American history. And that's why I want to talk about the Borgias, B-O-R-G-I-A-S. And I'm going to ask you, who are the Borgias of today? Have you heard of the Borgias? You see, once upon a time in Italy, in the 1500s, there was a family known as the Borgias. And they were one of the most powerful families in Europe, patrons of the arts. Most brilliant personalities of the era regularly visited their court, prominent in church and political affairs. But what the Borgias were most known for was their corrupt rule. Though more than one member of the Borgia family became pope, they were known for crimes such as adultery, theft, rape, bribery, incest, and murder. One of the first great patriarchs of the Borgia family was Rodrigo. He became a cardinal in the Catholic Church while he maintained an illicit relationship with his mistress on the side. Became pope in 1492 after bribing 17 cardinals. His main interests lay in acquiring more wealth, seducing women, and making his family as powerful as possible. He was accused of charging money for sacraments, nepotism, attending public orgies, and torturing and executing his enemies. Rodrigo Borgia's son was Cesare. As soon as he graduated from the university, his father made him a cardinal. Cesare is believed to have murdered his brother Giovanni. After his father's death, Cesare was responsible for choosing the next pope. He also had his sister Lucrezia's husband murdered when he was no longer politically useful to the family. Rodrigo Borgia's daughter was Lucrezia Borgia. She was married off by the family several times to forge political alliances. She was a notorious poisoner, and she became famous for her skill at political intrigue. As we may know by now, the Borgias lived a very long time ago. Their world of political intrigue and debauchery is very distant from our own. But given the fact that we still see powerful families enriching each other at the expense of the public today, I want to ask you a question. Who do you think are the Borgias of today? And do you think that the Obama administration is more or less corrupt than that of Bush or of any of those of the past? Very interesting question. Because if you confront a liberal with the fact that the Solyndra loan, over $500 million, went up in smoke, and that one of the directors of this solar company was just given another loan for $700 million, as if they say, screw the public, we're untouchable, we're above the law, we are the law. The untouchables are now the law. Remember there was a series on television in the 50s called The Untouchables, where the heroes were the good guys, and they always went after the bad guys? They went after the untouchables, Elliot Ness. What do you do if you wake up and you find out the untouchables are running America? Many people think they are. Many people think they are, which is why I worry about things such as, well, everything else. I have a newsletter that WorldNet Daily puts out, and they just did a little one where we sent out a mailing saying my book, Abuse of Power, just hit it to number 4 on the New York Times list. And here's what they wrote. It's a short couple of paragraphs, just for fun. Michael Savage doesn't always talk about politics on his radio show. Take the subject of coffee, for instance. Savage had great fun mocking the posers who pretend they're writing the great American novel at their tiny table in the cafe while secretly hoping someone notices how deep and artistic they are. Savage laughed. We've all done it, let's face it. He also made fun of the pretentious orders these liberal types always place while you're waiting in line for an ordinary cup of coffee. I want a double macchiato mocha with special beans that come from an altitude of 5,000 feet. I want the water from a particular well in Sonoma County where the pesticides don't mix with the herbicides, and a double, not a triple, with extra foam. Savage wondered if Moses himself had been troubled by posers who sat beside him in the Tel Aviv cafe, chiseling nonsense onto their own stone tablets, while Moses knocked off the Ten Commandments, his bestseller of all time. Pretty good. On a similar note, what else? let's see. On a similar note, the general manager of Chicago's WJJG 1530 announced that Michael Savage's radio show is coming to his station's lineup on October 3rd. It's interesting that Dr. Savage has been pigeonholed as a political talk show host, said Matt Dubiel. Michael is an artist. He's a best-selling author and a storyteller who's as likely to discuss making rigatoni as he is the events of the day. Chicago listeners enjoy Michael Savage, so we're giving them Michael Savage. Michael Savage's first novel, the thriller Abuse of Power, debuted this weekend at number 4 on the New York Times bestseller list. May I read you something? Is this the most corrupt administration in history? Do you think the Obama administration is more or less corrupt than that of Bush? Remember, Bush had Enron. Who are the Borgias of today? What headlines would you like to have seen in your morning paper? I was I was astonished to go on the internet today. I couldn't find anything about the $1 billion in loans except on the internet. Daily News. Jack old doctor frantically tried hiding drugs before paramedics arrived. I would like to say that the editors of the Daily News are bigger jackos than Jacko. Ashton Kutcher caught on camera with woman eerily similar to alleged mistress. Stars on Twitter, your all-access pass to celebs' thoughts, rants, and ridiculous pics. This is in the New York Daily News. So you say, well, what do you expect from the New York Daily News? Well, let's go to the San Francisco Chronicle. Let's see what they covered. It's in their backyard, Salinger, right? Did they cover the new $1 billion in loans that were given, including that to Pelosi's brother-in-law? Here's what's on the New York, San Francisco newspaper. Magic mushrooms can change your personality. B of A charges $5 a month for debit cards. Boy 15 held in slaying of SF chef. Police believe gang member mistook Hog and Rock's cook, Gaspar Puccisi, who was shot while on break for a rival. There it is. So not one word about the loan in the San Francisco newspaper. It's astonishing what's happened to the news in America. I mean, we know that they're not what we would like them to be. And, of course, that's why we read Magic Mushrooms instead of $1 billion in loans, again, given out to make fake solar companies. So let's go to the old lady, the old York Times, and see if they've covered it. Even if Europe averts crisis, growth may lag for years. Nothing about the $1 billion in loans. Banks are adding fees for debit cards. Court ruling could revive health care as issue in 2012. I'm not making this up. I'm not making this up. Times cast, Islam and democracy. I don't understand how that could be a headline. That's an oxymoron. Islamists prepare for elections in Egypt and Tunisia? Duh. Islam and democracy. You mean like in Saudi Arabia where women's hands are cut off if they drive a car? Let's see what else is in the New York Times, the great American newspaper. Well, you get the picture, nothing. None of the news that's fit to print. So you have to go to the internet. Now, you understand that if the Republicans, as tepid as they are, were not in power in Congress, I wouldn't be on the radio. You understand that Obama is a tyrant and a dictator. You understand that he is the most corrupt dictator that it's ever yet seized power in America. You understand that the only thing standing between us and the loss of our freedom of speech and freedom of the press are those Republicans who, as tepid as they are our only line that is holding them back from seizing total and absolute power. You understand all of this, don't you? I hope you understand how bad it is. I hope you understand it. Now let me read you a review from Amazon.com for my novel, Abuse of Power. I will not apologize for reading the review since I'm not being reviewed anywhere. Oh, by the way, I was invited on CNN by an unnamed host, and I'm going to ask you, should I agree to be interviewed on my novel on CNN about abuse of power? If they would stick to the novel, I wouldn't even be asking you the question. But what do you think they're really going to do if they get me on CNN? Huh? Here's a reviewer. Abuse of Power was a great book. I finished it in less than 48 hours. I could have lived with less sex in the book, especially the scene between the hero and the heroine. But that said, it is incredible that a guy who is so good at so many things has also been able to crank out such a great story right out of the chute. He then says, I guess I should have seen it coming. Listening to all of his great psychological nudity stories over the years. Anyway, all of the action, blow after blow, kept me going. The political and philosophical commentary and scriptural references were predictably on par with Savage's on-air insights. The unpredictable plot lines and characters kept me interested but not confused. The ending was reminiscent of Savage's on-air toughness in its viscerality. I was shocked at first by the ending. And that's what's so lovable about Michael. He's literally one of the last of the breed. Sadly, I love the incorporation of several heroic figures, each injected with our host's sensibilities. I alternated between forgetting whose work I was reading and having aha moments where I detected Dr. Savage's fingerprints. Reading the book, it's literally like one of my best friends walked up to me and handed me a manuscript, and I had no inkling the guy had it in him to write a novel. And with every turn of a page, I'm more flabbergasted that he was not only capable but is a virtuoso. It really is an unexpected treat, which I should have expected from Michael Savage in Abuse of Power. One last review. He says, it's not Hemingway. It is much better. This is a book that you cannot put down, so start early in the day, and it will be a day well spent. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I remember when I was in eighth grade, I had to take a class called ethics. Now, ethics is about right and wrong. But if you'd asked me what my favorite subject was back in eighth grade, it was basketball. I don't think ethics would have made it on the list.
I'm astounded. Is he trying to have a confessional with the American people? Is he finally cracking up? Even he has limits? I can't believe that that's actually the President of the United States admitting what we all know to be true, that he's better at night basketball than he is at ethics. Well, we could say that this administration has been better to basketball players than any administration in history. That would be true, I suppose. You could say it's this administration has been better to broccoli than any administration in history, better to carrots than to the American people. But would you believe you'd wake up on a Wednesday, 2 days before the deadline, and this administration would give out $1 billion to friends under the guise of solar projects after $500 million went missing in the Solyndra scandal? Would you believe they could get away with it? Sure you would believe it. If the New York Times will not produce the story, if the local newspapers around the country are talking about movie stars cheating on movie stars, you can get away with anything. You can get away with illegitimate wars in Libya. You can get away with closing down oil wells in the Gulf of Mexico or letting foreign nations drill off the Gulf states. You can get away with anything if you own the newspapers, or if the newspapers are fellow travelers, whichever way you want to put it. See, the phrase fellow traveler is one that you should put into your lexicon. It goes back to the old Cold War days when there were communists and anti-communists, and there were communists who had fellow travelers. Today we have communists running virtually every aspect of the American government and of the American media. So you say, well, come on, Mike, what do you mean by communists? I make it simple for you. It doesn't mean marching in the streets with a red beret. Communists believe in government control of every aspect of your life, centralized control, no states' rights, only federal rights, only run out of the White House. All roads lead to Rome. It's dictatorship. That's all it means. No, dictators come in many different sizes, forms, colors, varieties, sexes, genders, AC, DC, foot power, many, many different varieties of communism. There's outright communism, socialism, Leninism, this-ism, that-ism. At the end of the day, it's simply not good for the average person. I had a friend who has relatives who live in Panama. They've been there forever. They emigrated to Panama, God knows when. So they're in, you know, embedded in Panamanian society. They lived through Pineapple Head, Noriega, remember him? And now they're living through the democracy of Panama. And they said it was easier to live as a business person when there was a dictatorship in Panama because only one crook came by to their business for one payout. They said now it is every day. Bureaucrats come to their business every day with permits, demands, citations, punishments. Sounds like Marin County, California. Go try to build a house in Marin County, California. Every low-life bureaucrat ever invented will show up at your house. Fire permit, electric permit, water permit, air permit, floor permit. And then they'll tell you that you didn't do it right, and they send the next variety of bums out. Pensioners, they're worse than a dictatorship, but they're no less corrupt than a dictatorship. Yep. Nothing. There's a movie out called Killer Elite I saw over the weekend. Whoa, what a waste of time. Robert De Niro was in this movie with Clive Owen and Jason Statham. Killer Elite. I don't know how to describe it other than to say, can you believe a man would be tied to a chair and being tortured, and he flips himself over in the chair and beats up the people who are torturing him with the chair? Well, if you can believe that, go see it. Apparently, even the brain-dead morons who go to movies and theaters aren't going to see this lunacy. It's horrible. Robert De Niro looks like a homeless person, yet he's supposed to play an aging hitman protecting people. I couldn't believe it. It's comedic. How could they put Robert De Niro in that role? He should be playing a pizza maker in Brooklyn.
Savage. As a moon
let's go strolling. There's a girl in my heart.
Life is a series of terrors with an occasional plateau of happiness and beauty. If anyone tells you it's the other way around, they're lying to you or they're drug addicts. Life is terrifying. You know what real life is? It's a holy terror. That's why you're born screaming. And you die screaming. Do you understand that? Do you understand that, mister? That life is not what the teacher told you. Life is not what these freaks in America are trying to teach your children. Life is a nightmare. It's horrible. That's why you're born screaming. That's why you die screaming. But occasionally, as I said, there is, a brief respite here and there. I had one last night. And the tougher you make your kid, the happier your kid's going to be. And the tougher you raise the kid, the happier his life is going to be. And the softer you make your son, the worse his life is going to be. The softer you make your son, the more he's going to be stepped on and turned into a worm. But aside from that, so last night, as I told you, we had a heat wave out here in Northern California for 3 days, three, 4 days. And that's what it comes like. And, you know, you live with it. I got air conditioning. I remember when I first moved out here, we don't have air conditioning out in these parts. Our fog is on national air conditioning. Yeah, all right, you're smart, are you smoking? I don't know about you, but I can't take the heat. So I got air conditioning in every house I own. I can turn it into a refrigerator wherever I am. So anyway, last night was so hot that it was like a summer night. We used to call it Indian summer, but we're not allowed to call it that anymore, so we'll call it Native American summer. We had a Native American summer night. Hot, beautiful. So I figured, you know what, I'm going to fire up the old 65 Caddy convertible. And strangely enough, I bought this car in 1994 when I started in radio. It had 52,000 miles on it. It's red. It's 19 feet, 6 inches long. You know, it's from an era in America that I can remember very well. My father was still alive. It was a different world, right? The windows are almost a half an inch thick on the car. But I keep it in the garage. I never drive it, right? I keep a battery trickle charger. So last night I figured, all right, of all the cars you own, I mean, I own some exotic cars, I got to tell you. I'm not here to boast about them, but I do. I'm a machinery lover. It's funny, I mean, given my background and my orientation towards nature, I still love machinery. in that I'm a true American in that sense. I grew up in the age of the machine and the engine, and I still love engines. I'm not apologizing about it. In fact, all the freaks who bicycle around here all bring their bikes around with machines and engines. But let's not go there, okay? So I get the car. I bring it down to the house. I have it in the garage. And, you know, I have a dog, Teddy, a 10, 12-pound poodle. He's played as Eddie in my novel, Abuse of Power. He's the show dog. He's the clown. He's 7 years old. He's the joy of my life. Then I have a freak dog, like a retard, Tasha. She's about 5 years old and, like, does nothing for you. Everything is take, take, take. She's like a bad sister-in-law, you know what I'm saying? Or a relative you left behind in Brooklyn. Bitter, nasty, always subissing her, you know, nothing good to say, always sitting at, and she's nasty. All she wants is food. But we like her, and we take care of her. Teddy's the show dog. She's the dummy. You know how, like, for a horse, you get a goat. Tasha was got to be Teddy's goat, but she doesn't even do that right. All she does is, like, sit around. So I get a surprise last night. I honked the horn to pick up Mrs. S, and she says, I have a surprise for you. I said, what? She said, I got a new dog. I said, oh, God, no. So she got a Havanese, and she named it Toby. So now there's Teddy, Tasha, and Toby. So I said, what am I going to do, get mad? She got a dog? I don't even know what a Havanese is. I said, why not another small? Never mind, I got a Havanese. They're the cutest little thing. They're from Cuba, native to Cuba, which is good because I love Cuban music. And this is, of course, way before the communists destroyed Cuba. There was a nation called Cuba. It's thought that the dogs came from the Canary Islands. Sabor! Okay, good. Beautiful cutting, guys. You're the best. So the Havanese apparently is a lap dog from Cuba's aristocracy, which doesn't exist anymore. But they're very hardy, wonderful, playful little dogs. To make a long story short, he's only seven, I don't know how old he is. I don't know, 7 months? I don't know what he is. So you think, Teddy and him get along great, right? All I said was, is he house trained? Yes. The first thing he did was pee on the wall. Okay, terrific. Great training job. I'm glad to hear it. But I don't care. You know what I mean? I'd rather have a dog that pees on the wall than relatives of the kind. So I have Teddy, Tasha, and Toby. We pile them into the Cadillac. It's a hot night. What could I tell you? I go for a ride. I get on the highway. I shoot down to Sausalito, go around the waterfront. The car was running better than it's ever run for no reason. So she says to me, why is this car running better than it's ever run? It's smooth. You don't even hear this car. It's like a baby carriage. I own a Mercedes S600. It's a beautiful, incredible car. This thing is smoother, right? And has a certain suspension from the 60s that you can't beat. The dogs, it's a flat seat, right? No bucket seats. This is a flat bench seat. So the dogs love to sit between the two people. It tops down. They love the moon. They love the stars. They love the air. Dogs love the outdoors. And I said to myself, you know what I mean? This is it. This is what life is supposed to be. If you get 15 to 30 minutes of this once a year, you're ahead of the curve. It's not about skyrockets. It's not about getting stoned in a nightclub. It really isn't. Maybe it's about three dogs and a loyal companion in a Cadillac with the top down on a hot night. So that was one story. Now here's another story for you. The other day, I went down to Fisherman's Wharf, and I took a little bike ride. I don't eat down there no more because I just don't eat down there no more. But I went into a store that sells nautical items, nautical artifacts in San Francisco's Fisherman Wharf. You know, mixed in with the tourist dreck, the T-shirts. The guy is actually a store that sells real fisherman stuff. But he has artifacts, like nautical artifacts, steering wheels and ship models. So I like to poke around in there. I hadn't been in there in a year. The guy's a big Sicilian guy. He remembered me, of course, but I hadn't been in there in a year. I go in, so I'm touching this item, that. How much is this? How much is that? I see a pair of shoes, like size 16 shoes. Each shoe weighs 50 pounds, and it's next to a diving helmet. They're diving shoes. They're weighted. So I pick one up, and I struggle it over to the counter, and I say, how much do these Sicilian swimming shoes cost? He broke out in a big laugh. He got a kick out of that one. But I felt bad, so I bought a compass, a $20 compass. I could have bought it in probably a Target store for a buck. But, you know, I don't like to just go look around in a store and just be a deadbeat. You know, I told you, you go in a store, you buy something. But I thought the Sicilian swimming shoe thing was funny. So now I have Teddy, Tasha, and Toby. And that was it. And we stopped at a Thai restaurant that had an outdoor table in a parking lot. See, that's the problem with dogs. Once you have dogs, you no longer eat like a human being inside a restaurant with tablecloths. Now every decision is made upon who has an outdoor table that will let you bring dogs to the outside. So you're limited already. You're already eating in a marginal situation. But you know what? It's a trade-off. I'd rather see a dog next to me and a table that's a little shaky on a terrace, right? And it was dark already, than sit and listen to liberals inside discussing what a great man Obama is, you know, about how evil Nixon was. You know what I'm saying? So I'm eating. The dogs get nothing. What are you going to order a dog in a Thai restaurant? But I even figured that out by now. Wherever I go, you got to order something for a dog. So I said, can I order a side order of boiled chicken, no spices? Sure, for the dog. They probably charged me $8. I was afraid to look. But to tell you the truth, Toby and Teddy really liked that chicken. So that's my life today. Thank God it's not diver shoes. It's three dogs and a Cadillac. And now on that note, play some There's a Moon Out Tonight, and I'll get back to regular programming on the Savage Nation. I can't wait to play with Toby tonight.
Motor cooled down, the heat went down, and that's when I heard that highway sound. Cadillac setting like a ton of lead, 110 and a half a mile ahead. Cadillac looking like it's setting still, and I caught Maybelline at the top of the hill. Maybelline, why can't you be true?
It is Chuck Berry, when America was great, when the chrome was thick and the women were straight. Yeah. Are we ever going to get this country back? Are we ever going to have an American in the White House? Are we ever going to have a government we can trust? Or is it over? You know, there are riots all over the world now. I mean, the people understand that the Western world is so corrupt. The Arabs are rioting. They know that their leaders are corrupt. Of course, because I like stability, and I certainly believe in the electoral process. After all, we have a very fine two-party system where you know one party is so much better than the other. I mean, just listen to Rush. You'll understand who to vote for. But the fact of the matter is, how much more can this country take? $1 billion is $1 billion. I mean, no matter how you cut it. You know, it adds up. $1 billion on Wednesday and another billion on Thursday. That starts to add up. And that's why I say I don't know if we'll ever get this country back. I saw a story this morning that was to be expected, but not to be believed. After demise of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, activists call for anti-military ban on transgenders. With homosexuals now able to serve openly in the military, the so-called gay right movement's next battleground is to persuade the Obama administration to end the armed forces' ban on transgenders, a group that includes transsexuals and cross-dressers. Now, you and I both know that this is not about gays or transgenders dying to serve America. That you know, right? Well, you don't know that. Because they could have served very happily without making us listen to the whole deal, right? As a matter of fact, in the military, you're not allowed to have sex between an officer and a gentleman to begin with. In other words, there are heterosexual sex is banned in the military between partners, so far as I understand, between parties. But this is not about sexual freedom. This is about destroying America from within, in my estimation. But let's put that aside. Let's put that aside. Let's talk about Havanese dogs. Yep, will the country ever wake up? Will the country ever wake up? Iranian pastor faces execution for refusing to recant Christian faith. And this Iranian Hitler comes to America, and they have lunch with him at the Columbia University. Instead of arresting him as a war criminal, our country actually welcomes him as a legitimate leader. But then again, what can I tell you? What can I tell you? Everything is what I'm telling you is what I can tell you. I'm a little off today. I got to tell you, there's a bad side to the Cadillac story. I got a headache on me from the fumes that I can't even tell you. As I was putting it away in the garage, those cars stink. They emit such pollution, it's unbelievable. I mean, no matter how I try to stop it, I put it in the garage, I almost gagged to death. It reminded me of the whole 1960s all over again when I would play around in Nyberg's funeral parlor driving the Cadillac hearses and the flower cars. 10-year-old kid, 11-year-old kid, the guys in the funeral business used to let me drive the cars inside the funeral parlor. What fun I had. You know, park them. That's why I'm a very good driver to this day. My dad had a little antique store next to it. It was a funeral parlor, right? So as a kid in those days, you could play on the street without getting killed or raped because all the men were out there watching the kid. And if anyone looked at you wrong, they would either have the guy thrown down into a basement or they'd call a cop who would give him a beating like he never had in his life with a nightstick, and the pervert would never come around to the neighborhood again. But those were those days. Anyway, I go in the funeral parlor as a kid, and they let me drive the hearse and this car and the flower car. But those garages stank, you know what I mean? I mean, the fumes. How did the men even survive in those days? The reek that came out of those cars in the 60s, 50s, 60s. They had a passageway onto the elevator. I mean, the garage must have been built in the 20s or the 30s. Now you're talking the 50s, 60s. The cars were wider, right? It was less than a quarter of an inch clearance to pull it into one of those Godfather elevators, you know, like where they pull a strap and you pull a car in and they pull a strap and the door comes down. And the elevator has certain sounds like, they threw like the wheel they would turn. It was a different sound in the elevator, smooth. Like an Electroglide in Blue elevator, you know, that took you right up. If you pressed the wrong way on the thing, it took you down into the mortuary where they did the embalming. I really didn't want to go down there once. I did go down there once. Remember I told you I went in the mortuary? Remember I told you that story? You don't want to hear it. You want to hear about the Borgias, and you want to hear about the billion-dollar loan. You want to hear about don't ask, do tell. You want to hear about solar energy. So one hot summer day, on Ludlow Street in my father's market, I'm fishing around for those Coca-Cola bottles in an ice box. There was not a refrigerator outside. They actually had ice, and they had the water would turn so cold that when you fished for the, you'd roll up your undershirt, and you'd stick your arm in, and you'd fish around for a soda. The water was so cold, your arm turned blue by the time you found the soda. Actually, the last I saw that portrayed in the movies was in Carlito's Way, where the guy reaches for the soda and gets knocked off. So anyway, I got my arm in the thing. I'm fishing out the soda. I'm giving you the picture, the background. And my father goes back in his store. To this day, you know, having dreams, I'm back in the store with him over and over again. Maybe I don't know. I don't want to get into it. I don't want to get into this whole maudlin thing. But I think I'm dreaming too much about him and the store. It means like I'm about to, you know, take the walk. I don't know. It's not good. These dreams are not good. If you start dreaming too much about that, it means that you're close to, you know what I mean? So I don't really like it, but I don't control the subconscious. So anyway, he goes back in the store, and I think the guy's name was Louie from the funeral parlor. He says, hey, kid, you want to come in here and take a look around? Yeah, yeah, I go in. I go in there. He says, have you ever seen a stiff? I said, no. He said, you want to see a stiff? Now, we're not talking pervert here, okay? He meant corpse. We're not talking about, you know what I'm saying, the teachers of today. So he says, all right, the elevator, down, pulls the strap. Instead of going up into the garage, down into the thing. And there's the stiff and the autopsy, the boy cut open and the horrible, like a chicken farm. So now I come up from whatever they call it. And that's not an autopsy. An autopsy is in the hospital, right? This is an embalming. Horrible, disgusting thing. I come up, I'm 11 years old, there must have been a change in my eyes because my father was on the street looking for me. Michael, where are... And he sees me come out of there, and he looks in my eyes. You know, a father can see it. He sees a change in me. He says, where were you? I said, I was in there with Louis. He said, well, what'd you do in there? I said, I went downstairs. And what'd you do downstairs? I told him. Well, I don't think he ever liked Louis again after that. Do I have to take a break? I was just starting to enjoy myself, and I have a headache to boot. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to have another sip of delicious hot tea. Wait a minute now. Oh, I drink tea during the shows, and I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. The sound you're about to hear is from the crypt, because you're not going to believe it. It's Nancy Pelosi praising Charlie Rangel, saying that the Gospel of Matthew is responsible for Charlie Rangel's behavior. Listen to this.
I think what brings a passion to his work is the fact that Charlie Rangel is a deeply religious man. How many times has he said to us, the Gospel of Matthew made me do it? When the Gospel talked about the least of our brethren, when they were hungry, when they were needed shelter, when they
beyond
needed
belief. Even beyond belief. Said,
when I was in prison, you visited me. Very, very important.
This is Nancy Pelosi saying that what brings a passion to Charlie Rangel is the fact that he's deeply religious. And that is why you saw pictures just whacked out in a beach chair. That's why you saw he didn't pay taxes. That's why he was held up on ethics charges. I didn't know the Gospel of Matthew told you how to scam the system. Is there anything in the Gospel of Matthew about evading taxes that I missed? Can anyone find in the Gospel of Matthew anything in it which says that you can go to Costa Rica and get away with not declaring your condominium or something like that? Is there anything in the Gospel of Matthew which says that you can avoid paying taxes if you're in the government? I must have missed that part of Matthew. Let me reread it over the weekend to be fair and see if there's any truth to that particular statement. Here's another soundbite. Oh, my God, we're out of time already in this hour. We have another screamer, which is former President Jimmy the Jew-hater Carter on meeting with Hitler's like Kim mentally ill Sung from North Korea, the Cuban dictator Castro, and how the Arab Spring is such a wonderful thing for the world. You and I both know that Carter is a lifetime Israel hater. You and I both know that Carter's only goal is for every Jew to pack a valise. Not every Jew at 22, but every Jew. Well, you get the picture.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
A Havanese dog's expression should be soft and intelligent. They should appear more mischievous than cute. They have dark brown eyes, large almond-shaped eyes that are set rather widely apart. Dogs should have good dark pigment on their nose, lips, and eye rims. A scissors bite is ideal. Welcome to the Savage Nation. I wish we could pick our politicians as carefully as we pick our pets, but unfortunately we can't, and that is why we're in the pickle that we're in. Let's take some callers now on the Savage Nation. Suzanne in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please. You're on the great Savage Nation.
I can't thank you enough for writing Abuse of Power. I couldn't put the book down. I have recommended it to everybody that I talk to at work, around my neighborhood. Michael,
amazing.
It's wonderful. And I don't usually read fiction. The book was...
You know, I know someone who reads these thrillers 3-4 a week. She's a very busy businesswoman. She doesn't watch television, but she reads these. She said the book is better than almost any of them because most of them start off good, but they peter out in the middle. She said this one kept getting more tense as it went along. And she said that the unexpected ending was shocking.
Well, yours held my interest from the first page. I also want to tell you a lot of intelligent women listen to you, Michael. And my brother.
Well, I know. I have 30 or 31 female listeners in my 8 million listener base. There are 31 women. You make it 32.
And my brother went to Jamaica High School. So
I only have men who are Neanderthals who listen to the show. According to liberals, only people with IQs less than 70 who are lacking teeth and are Neanderthal in behavior listen to the Savage Nation.
No,
so women are welcome, and I thank you very much for the calling. For the call. I think I got carbon monoxide poisoning today from that Cadillac. I mean, that was the downside. I got a smasher. Las Vegas, Craig, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael, just a quick nice thing I wanted to say today. I'm driving back and forth. I'm in the limousine business, and I have the Pro-Am tournament, and all the caddies are getting in my car for the next few days. And I have your show on because I have plenty of time to kill, and I always listen to your show. So when they,
where are you? You're in Vegas?
I'm in Vegas, yeah. The Justin Timberlake Pro-Am tournament. So all the pro golfers are here, and the caddies are getting in the car, and they're digging the show, and they don't want me to turn it off. They say, no, leave it on. We like
So all the caddies are getting in the caddies, huh? Well, in the old days, it would have been true. The caddies would be getting in the caddies. Now the caddies are getting into what? The Kias? What are they getting into?
This is the caddy. I said, this is the caddy for the caddies. They're in a caddy.
Oh, good. I didn't even think that they were still driving one. I thought it was illegal in America to drive a Cadillac.
They really are. Show,
Craig, I'm going to send you a copy of Abuse of Power so you can read it and enjoy it and show it to your caddies in your caddy. Oh, Lord, what am I going to do with myself tonight? Oh, so before the last hour, as the last hour was drawing to a conclusion, I mentioned some sound we had, but by the time it turned around in this hour, I don't want to play Jimmy Carter. I don't know about you. I can't listen to him. I can't listen to Jimmy Carter because as far as I'm concerned, he is one of the most despicable men in American history. Here is a man who has orchestrated the so-called Arab Spring, which, as you know, is a disaster for world freedom. The Arab Spring is going to turn out to be the Arab darkness, the Arab winter. Listen to clip 32.
After the Arab Spring and after some disturbances in Gaza, Israel approved a few more weapons that Egypt could bring into their own Sinai region. The bottom line is, it's a complicated affair. The Arab Spring has brought hope for democracy and freedom to many people in the region, including those in Syria still and now in Libya.
Oh, shut your mouth, you lying Jew hater, you. You lying Jew hater, you. Syria killing thousands of its own citizens and you don't say a word about it? But if a Palestinian breaks a fingernail, you get up on your snake charming horse? Why is this man even listened to? This crackpot. This anti-American crackpot, Jimmy Carter. The Arab Spring is a complicated affair. It's not complicated at all. George Soros funded the think tank that you and Brzezinski and others orchestrated within this think tank the overthrow of Sadat in Egypt, our best ally for so many years. And the wars in the Middle East are all a result of you, Jimmy. So it's not that complicated for those of us who have studied it. But then again, it's only one man's opinion. The not-so-green mountains, here's an article from the New York Times. My headline is much different than the not-so-green mountains. It's on michaelsavage.com. And let me read you my headline so you know where I'm coming from right from the get-go. And where did it wind up on the website? I have to find it. I have to scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll. The Cain Mutiny, Savage Reads. Iran might actually have passed. I don't see it. Where is this? Where is the story I just sent on the Green Mountains being torn apart for wind turbines that the liberals are here? Wind turbines destroy Vermont's Green Mountains. That's my headline. Bulldozers arrived a couple of weeks ago at the base of the nearby Lowell Mountains and began clawing their way through the forest to the ridgeline, where Green Mountain Power plans to erect 21 wind turbines, each rising to 459 feet from the ground to the tip of the blades. This desecration in the name of green energy is taking place in Vermont's Northeast Kingdom on one of the largest tracts of private wild land in the state. Here and in other places, in Maine and off Cape Cod, for instance, the allure of wind power threatens to destroy environmentally sensitive landscapes. So they're clear-cutting forests in Vermont, and all the liberals are so psychotic. They're so psychotic that they would destroy the beautiful mountains of Vermont that bring in hundreds of millions of dollars in tourist money, $1.4 billion in tourism spending, to build wind power in Vermont. And the man says, oh, wow, look what we're doing. It says, it also represents a profound failure to understand the value of our landscape to our souls and our economic future in Vermont. So now it's liberal versus liberal. They're finally coming to understand that the green is nothing but a money machine. The green is nothing but a green machine for the corrupt who have used the green to get the green, and they would clear-cut their way if it meant killing their daughter's schoolyard. If it meant cutting down their daughter's school to make another buck, they would do it. So they're destroying the Green Mountains now for wind turbines, all in the name of green. Oh, green, green, green grows the rushes, oh. 63 megawatts, enough to power about 24,000 homes per year. That's if the wind actually continues to blow in the way it's been blowing. But I don't believe it. Instead, they're going to destroy Vermont's Green Mountains so that a few people can benefit from the green scam. All right, let's take some callers. Salt Lake City, Kevin, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi there, Dr. Savage. I totally think you should go on CNN. The rest of the world needs to hear how awesome you are.
Well, here's the problem. If they invited me on allegedly to talk about the book Abuse of Power, but they're not going to talk about it. Instead, they're going to try and smear me. And no matter how I try to steer it back to the success of the novel and the great plot, the rat who's invited me on will do what he's known for, which is try to smear me. Why should I let him do that?
Because, you know, they've tamed down a little bit, it seems like, and they're being a little bit more balanced and so forth, and they're not any worse.
Yeah, I see, but I've had my experience with rats in television. What they do is they edit. If you get the best of them in a debate or you try to get your ideas across, they'll edit you right out. They'll just cut it right out on a tape delay. They won't even hear what I have to say. You know, whereas if I rub my nose for 1 second with a right finger because I have an itch, that's what they'll show. The vermin with the camera will focus in on the finger and the nose. So, you know, I mean, I don't need that. Look, Kevin, here's the point. I don't need CNN. They need me. Do you understand what I'm saying? My audience is awesome. I was able to push this book onto the big lists without them. What do I need them for? You got to ask yourself at a certain point, what do you really need exposure like that for? And you know what I mean, Kevin? I mean, not all exposure is good, and not all exposure is necessary.
True.
So I'm going to send you a copy of my novel, Abuse of Power, so you can enjoy it. That's all. I would like to play some rock and roll music, and then I'm going to take a caller from West Virginia, Karen. She's near North Carolina, where the governor said that we should suspend elections, and the governor has not been thrown into a prison yet. So let's go to, as you're getting that rock and roll ready, let's go to Karen in West Virginia on line five. Go ahead, Karen, what's on your mind?
Oh, good afternoon, Dr. Savage. I just was listening to your show, as I do most every day, and the story about the funeral home just kind of creeped me out a little bit, and I can't imagine what it would do to a little boy. So,
well, but you see, those days were different. Those were different days, Karen.
Yes, they were.
I didn't turn into a homicidal maniac. I just had more respect for the living than I would have otherwise. In other words, I realize that there's an end to it all.
Thanks a lot. But
in other words, it could have freaked another kid out. You know, it could. I wouldn't recommend it. I mean, I wouldn't certainly send my son into a morgue to look at an autopsy. I keep mixing up autopsy and embalming. I don't know why I mix those two things up. Autopsy and embalming. I mean, I know they're different. I'm going to send you a copy of Abuse of Power so you can get your mind on something more interesting than autopsies. I wonder why Jimmy Carter is obsessed with hating Jews in Israel. What is it? Is it the time he was born in that makes him a bigoted, racist, anti-Semite? Is it the fact that his sect drinks strychnine and shakes snakes? Is it the fact that his brother Billy made beer that may have not had ethyl alcohol in it, but methyl alcohol, and he tasted the product too often? I don't understand it. Listen to clip 28. Here's Jimmy again.
You saw some of the more controversial people with whom I've met. Kim Il-sung from North Korea. I've been to North Korea twice in the last year. Also, Cuba. We have a very counterproductive foreign policy of trying to freeze out the Cuban people and depriving
you
American
see this? This is what you mean by a fellow traveler. This is what I'm trying to explain to you. Jimmy is a lifetime communist, in my opinion, a lifetime world socialist, if you want to put it in a more benign sense. In any case, the man has never stopped lobbying for a world government, a one-world despotic regime, as you well understand. The think tank that has orchestrated the Arab Spring was funded by his good friend George Soros, another fine example of democracy in action. What else do you want to talk about? I don't know about you. I don't want to talk about politics right now. I truly want to move on to something else. The news is so horrible. The only good news is that Hugo Chavez is in the hospital again for kidney failure. And I wonder what Mini-Me is going to do if Hugo Chavez should die. What is Mini-Me Sean Penn going to do? What if his controller actually should cross the River Styx? What is Sean Penn going to do for entertainment? I guess he'll hang around with his good buddy Ahmadinejad, the Hitler of our time. What do you think a guy like Sean Penn is going to do if Hugo Chavez actually passes? And Mini-Me Penn, light square double size of lobbying team. Osama bin Laden's bodyguard freed by Pakistan. Enron veteran turns up in $737 million solar loan guarantee from Obama. Solyndra violated terms of its U.S. loan. Key parts of Alabama immigration law upheld. Savage reads from abuse of power. North Carolina governor wasn't joking about suspending elections. Let's see what else is on the website. Holocaust humor at the Daily Beast. Uncle Sam is her pot dealer and it's legal. President's illegal uncle giggles in court. That's his uncle Giggles, we'll call him. Cuba legalizes general purchase and sale of cars. Wow, that's a real stroke. That's a real stroke for human liberty. This is driving around 1950s cars in Cuba. That's how advanced the society is. That's what Jimmy Carter has in mind for you. To freeze everything in America so it's like Cuba. You wind up playing dominoes in a back alley under Obama and Jimmy Carter. I can't, but Cuba legalizes general purchases and sale of cars. It takes effect October 1. Really? They're going to let him buy a car? Cuba legal? Why would they stop him from buying a car in Cuba? You can't escape the island in a Toyota. Cuba legalized the sale and purchase of automobiles for all citizens on Wednesday, another major step in the communist-run island's economic transformation. That's a real step forward. I mean, that brings them up to 1910, right? I mean, that you can buy a car. It says that Cubans who leave the island for good can transfer ownership of their car to a relative or sell it outright. Oh, I have to take a break again just so I'm having fun again? Okay, I'll be right back.
Savage.
I remember when I was in eighth grade, I had to take a class called ethics. Now, ethics is about right and wrong. But if you'd asked me what my favorite subject was back in eighth grade, it was basketball. I don't think ethics would have made it on the list.
What is this, like a confessional? It's the first honest thing the man has said since he became president. That's amazing, probably since Punahou High School. He said he majored in basketball, not ethics. That's pretty clear. See, now, Obama's business model is that of Cuba. Government Motors, right? The takeovers that he was stopped by the Electoral Revolution. Remember, we had an election that was a mandate on Obama's communism, and we threw out over 60 Democrats. Remember, there's been an election since. And never mind what the vermin in the media tell you, there was a mandate on Obama's communism, and there was a no, don't do it. We had a big election, if you remember, and he lost. He lost enormously. America said no to communism. But his business model would have been that of Cuba. So now, after all these years since the gangsters took over Cuba and threw out the other gangsters, they're going to allow people to buy cars in Cuba. But here's the caveat. Each buyer and each seller must pay the government 4%. Then you have to have a sworn declaration that the money used for buying the car was obtained legally. That's number three. Then number four, the cars have to be purchased from a state-owned dealership, no private-owned dealer. Listen to this. There's more reforms coming. The Castro brothers have announced that they plan to legalize the sale and purchase of real estate by the end of 2011. Huh? Just think.
Savage.
The toy dogs play a role that is much larger than the dogs themselves, for they are the true companion animals. They've been selectively bred for size and often for great style. Despite their small size, many of them are first-rate watchdogs, quick to announce the approach of strangers. They are intelligent, responsive, loyal little animals, and fill their job with great enthusiasm.
Yeah, they sure do. So now we have three. We have two little poodles and a Havanese named Toby. We got Teddy. We got Tasha. We got Toby. They're all beautiful. They're all beautiful. So anyway, I'm going to read you something now. The last we left off, my protagonist, my hero, Jack Hatfield, is living on a boat with his little dog, Eddie, a little poodle, 10-pound poodle, right? I want to read you something. It's a paragraph. And I want you to compare it to other books that you have read which have described the water or a bay or San Francisco. And you tell me this is not as good, if not better, than anything ever written about San Francisco. I compare this as good as Jack London's writing, if not better. I'm telling you the way it is. I don't need someone to say that. Well, I need some freako reviewer to say it. I'm telling you what it is. All right, so he gets up on the boat, and he takes his dog for a walk. And he says, this morning, however, the area was deserted, and Jack let the dog roam as he looked out at the morning sky and the bobbing boats on the marina. Jack had always been awestruck by the morning sun on the bay. On calm days when the water was flat, even a dim sun behind clouds and fog lit the surface in a light show unmatched by any digitally equipped house on Earth. Think about that sentence. They can't teach you that at Harvard Literary. On calm days when the water was flat, even a dim sun behind clouds and fog lit the surface in a light show unmatched by any digitally equipped house on Earth. Here or even in the cabin, as Jack peered out, he inevitably found himself wondering about God, creation, the meaning of life, and all those grand universal questions. In that sense, he was a spiritual man. He knew that life did not end when we died. He had seen too many deaths in Iraq to take the Nat Geo view of things. No, the earth was not created from a ball of fire. God had created the earth and the heavens. No, we did not simply expire like a fly or seagull. We were judged by God and sent into the next world, judged for the things we did and the things we should not have done. Judge, too, for the things we did not do and should have done, for the things we said and should not have said, for the words we should have said and did not say. He was content to maintain his belief in an invisible God and conduct his life accordingly, and he was sustained by this faith. And while Jack himself steered clear of churches or temples, save the occasional wedding or funeral, he deeply admired those who regularly worshipped. He believed that honorable houses of worship were the moral compass that kept society on the right track. Sure, he had met some religious people who were outright bastards, but so what, he thought. Religion itself, God himself, were the eternals. Some religious institutions had their share of shame and fraud. But for Jack, they were first and foremost the core of the family, the bricks of civilization. And except for one religion, they all seemed to preach tolerance for others. All religions had gone through their phases of crusade and persecution, but only Islam still openly preached conquest and conversion, especially the radical Wahhabi sect. They were anti-women, anti-freedom, anti-America. Jack sighed, bringing his mind back to the morning as he walked Eddie back home. So that's it. What do you think about that in Abuse of Power? You think it's pretty good? Something else in here that I want to read to you? Well, I think that's good enough for right now. That's my reading for the day. Let's go to the callers on the Savage Nation. Calvin in Virginia, welcome to the program.
Dr. Savage, it is an honor and a pleasure to finally have a chance to speak with you.
Thank you.
I am a 28-year-old African-American male. I've been listening to you since August 15th of 2005. That was the day that my father passed away.
Oh, my God.
After my father passed away that morning, I can remember driving in my car that afternoon, just kind of contemplating everything that had happened. Mm-hmm. I remember turning my radio station, I heard your voice, and for some reason, You have stuck with me. Your voice resonates. It's almost a nurturing type of voice, but also a protective. But it's the sincerity that you exude. It inspires me. And I've followed you ever since August 15th of 2005.
Calvin, that's one of the most inspiring calls I've ever had in my radio life. That's so beautiful. You never know who listens, Calvin. You don't know what they feel, what they think, why they're listening. But I guess I fill the void of your deceased father in a certain way.
You absolutely do. And I tell my wife, because she doesn't listen to talk radio as much as I do, but I tell her that I knew my father as a child, but when he passed away, I did not know him as a man, so the advice that I would have taken from him as a man, I don't have. But for some reason, when I turn on the radio and I listen to you, you do take the place of my father, and the advice and the words that you provide of encouragement, I believe that my father would have told me those similar things, such as your stories that you tell of you wrecking your friend's Jaguar and about your Mercedes that you named Wilhelm. And those stories, I mean, sincerity. I mean, you have no idea how much you.
That's funny that you remember those obscure, you know, notations to the show. That you even remember that I named my car Wilhelm. That's very funny.
Dr. Savage, you have no idea how much of a fan I am of yours. I mean, I skim your website every time I get a chance. And, oh, man.
Look, Calvin, you've said enough, honestly, and I'm going to send you a copy of Abuse of Power. When I say that, I don't mean to cut you off, but I don't want you to go where you don't want to go. Okay, let's leave it at that. It's an interesting call in many ways, and I can easily digress into that call because it may be important. In that America's in flux, the Western nations are in flux. We don't know which way to turn. We are all perplexed. We know something's very wrong when we see outright corruption and greed and graft on a level never before seen on a national level. Yes, we knew this existed. We knew it went on at the state level, the local level. We knew that there were greedy, low-life politicians. But we've never seen it done on a presidential level with such naked arrogance. Never in history. I don't know of it. Let's put it that way. Maybe in the post-Civil War era, it was like this. I don't really know. I'm not an American historian. And then we had at the beginning in the 1900s, there were some corrupt regimes. But in our modern times, it's never been like this. Yes, under Bush, you had the contract scams in Iraq. And I talked about it continuously. But we didn't get the details. Billions of dollars went up in smoke. Okay? Then you had the Enron scandal under Bush. We understand that. But the solar energy garbage, we understand most of the green energy stories are complete and unadulterated graft. We understand its payouts to donors. We understand all of that. But to think that it's not hitting the newspapers is even more unimaginable because the scale of the corruption is so overwhelming. Remember 2 weeks ago, the FBI raided Solyndra. Now, 2 weeks later, they give out $1 billion to two other solar companies and the country is not talking about it. It's not on every show in America, on every newsstand. No, it isn't, because they're fellow travelers. So that leaves us with today, and it leaves us with talk radio. I am one man alone. I have no organization. I have no headquarters. I have no office. My office is a telephone booth, so to speak. My office is a cell phone and a computer. I have no network, none whatsoever. I'm a man alone. So how do I reach so many people? How do I reach so many people? Why do you listen? You've got 50, 70 radio stations in most metropolitan markets. You've got the unlimited internet access, newspapers, books. Why would you take the time out to listen to me? You have to understand, I ask myself this every day when I get up. Like, why the heck would they listen to me? I mean, I'm telling you my view of the world. And I'm not asking you to call and tell me, Mike, I'm listening because blah, blah, blah. I don't want you to call on that because I pretty much know the answer to the question. I'm posing the question for another reason. And I don't have a conclusion to what I just said. All I can say to you is that this is a very difficult business. It's a very difficult time. I've been immersed in a lawsuit for my honor for well over several, hates courts and hates anything to do with suing. And here it is, it just shows you how life is. But you have to take it the way it comes. You get the cards dealt at you and you play the hand. That's all there is to it. So at a certain point, you have to ask yourself, you know, what it's all about. What's your legacy? Does a legacy matter? There are no legacies anymore. That's another thing I have to tell you. When I grew up, a legacy mattered. I remember when I was 18 and struggling to figure it all out, I remember writing some blathering poetry or whatever, and then I wrote in my journal at the time that the mark a man leaves at his death is what he writes, you know, in that case, because I was a writer. But no one cares who the guy was who wrote what. The world changed with the advent of the internet and the computer. The whole world changed because there is no yesterday. There's not even a tomorrow. There's only now. There's not even a today. There's only a now. There's not even yesterday. There's not even an hour ago. There's only now. So what does a legacy mean? Do you really care what a man wrote? His body of work? Are you kidding me? There was a time in Jewish history when a man was buried with the books he wrote. Did you know that? You didn't know that. Books? Are you kidding me? Does anyone even know what the man did? Does anyone care what the man did? Does anyone care what the man stood up for? Does anyone care what the man stood up for in the battlegrounds of Iraq? Or the CIA men who stood up and died for this country who are now being attacked by the Obama administration? Men who gave their lives for this country to keep us safe from the communist bastards who want to turn us into slaves are now being prosecuted by Eric Holder? Does that not register in your mind as to tell you where we are living and how? I say to myself every day as I get up, no, it doesn't matter at all. The whole world is upside down. That's why I'll take a break and be right back.
Savage.
There's a moon out tonight. Let's go strolling.
It is the Savage Nation. $1 billion in loans, $700 million, some of which goes to a gentleman who is Nancy Pelosi's kin. It's on the Drudge Report. Not in your local newspaper, of course. Didn't happen. Because it came from Uncle Giggles. Giggles, the president, gave the $1 billion loan after the FBI raided Salinger. And whatever Giggles does is good. That's all. If Giggles does it, it must be good and fair. And after all, he's not Nixon. Nixon was the crook, not Obama. So what else is out there? Distinguished UN prize to be named for notoriously corrupt African ruler. You shocked by that? You shocked by that? Death expected Friday for Christian in Iran, says Drudge. He changed the headline. Nancy went down and Michelle went up. Women's World. First Lady makes Target run. Apparently she went shopping in Target. She couldn't take the White House anymore, so she put on a baseball cap and went out shopping. Yeah, well, in part, I'm a little off. I got a little carbon monoxide, I think, from the caddy. It was the caddy's revenge. Honest to God. I can feel it. I can feel it's carbon monoxide poisoning. It's like the 50s came back to torture me. I'll play with the dog on the floor tonight. So thank God the weather's getting colder here. I couldn't wait. I hate Indian summer here. People live for it. I said, why don't you move to Mexico if you love the heat? I love the schmucks who move to the Northern California. Oh, I love the hot weather, don't you? You love it so much, why don't you move to Los Angeles, idiot? What are you living in San Francisco for? Oh, I just love a hot 91-degree day in San Francisco. Unbelievable to me with the shorts and the hair on the legs. So here we are. What else do you want to talk about? Jimmy Carter? Forget about it. I'd rather talk about a Havanese. All right, Greg in Houston, you're on the Savination. Savage Nation. Savination.
Hi, Dr. Savage. You know, I haven't bought a book in 15 years. I'm a very educated man, very well spoken. However, when you had just read your passage, and as beautifully as you spoke and as eloquent as it was, that has completely convinced me to go out and purchase this book.
That's interesting. No, but I had to show people that this is not just another hack thriller novel. There's a little bit of literature in it, okay? And the people who read it are shocked to find out that those sensibilities exist in this book.
And it's the rare thing to find nowadays. You know, you got a lot of people out there that you just don't find very good literature out there on. That's primarily the reason why I haven't bought a book. I don't like thrillers. I'm not big into fiction. However,
well, I'm going to send you a copy anyway, because if you do buy one, it'll be great or whatever. I'm going to send you one because of the commentary, and I'm giving them away this week. I'm not going to be doing it for much longer. Abuse of Power goes out to you, and give a spare copy away for Christmas or for the New Year's holiday. If you celebrate the Chinese New Year, it's a good gift. If you celebrate the... today is actually the first day of the Jewish New Year, Rosh Hashanah, the head of the year. The head of the year 5,772. You know, you got to take your hats off to a tradition that survived that long. Think about that. What do you think? This is the first time in history that people have lived through a corrupt regime? Go back to the Egyptian times. So there's a lot to be said for people who uphold traditions in any religion, to be honest with you. And here in America, where so much in tradition has been lost, I think it's miraculous that we see people still adhering to a religion of any religion, frankly. I told you I'm a supporter of the five principal religions on earth. I only wish that the one religion that seems to have not caught up with the times would go through its reformation already so we can get on with living together. You know, I mean, if you preach that only your religion is the only religion, the other religions aren't true religions, and therefore cut off the head unless they follow your religion, I don't think that's a religion. I think that's something other than a religion, personally. But then again, I have a rather different view than Jimmy Carter does about what religion should be. To me, religion is do as you do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I mean, it does boil down. If that means cutting off their head, then expect to have your head cut off. I mean, if your religion preaches to cut the other man's head off because he's an infidel, then you can expect a B-2 bomber for breakfast, you know. That would be if we had an American president who understood the danger we're in, you know. I mean, you can expect a B-2 bomber to visit you for breakfast if you were preaching kill the infidel and kill America and this and that. I mean, Bush had that right. You got to give him credit for that. Never mind it on the level of domestic this and that, or that there was corruption in the contracting. I mean, that was a collateral damage to the fact that the man did do the right thing with regard to going to war with the enemies of our way of life. Period. End of story. I can't say the same for giggles. I cannot say that. So what do you want to do now in the remaining moments of this show? I'll take a caller out of New York. Robert in WOR, New York. What's on your mind, Robert?
Yes, Michael, you have to do the TV program. And number two, Hemingway strove to write the perfect sentence. So I guess you're in good company listening to what you're
saying. Well, I understand that. He was, in those days, that was a goal of many writers. They were seeking the perfect sentence with the writing, the precise comma and the... You know, if you focus too much on the right sentence, I think you lose the paragraph. And then if you focus too much on the paragraph, you lose the story. The one thing I have found is that if the story is no good, the book is worthless.
You're right.
But am I right? I mean, doesn't the story have to be? It's like watching a movie. I'm a movie fanatic. I watch a movie every night on TV. I just absorb myself in movies. If the story is not good, then the beauty of the actress, the directing, the lighting, et cetera, and so on, it falls apart and I'll turn it off. There has to be a compelling story to attach to it. And so having watched so many stories in my life, I think I've written a winner here, and that's why I'm very happy to tell you it's a winner. Now, I think the people – look, I don't care how many times I talk about it. This book wouldn't be selling if people weren't talking about it. So I'm sending you a Rosh Hashanah present, Robert, in New York. Even if you're Irish, it's okay to be receiving that. It'll become in a plain brown matzah wrapper on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. So there's a picture now of Michelle Obama in Target wearing a baseball cap and sunglasses, stands in line at a Target. What is she trying to prove? Why is she in Target store? Can anyone explain that to me? How is that possible? They say her popularity remains high. Do you think that her popularity is as high as the vermin in the media tell you? This woman spent $10 million last year of taxpayer money traveling around the world. Now they're telling us that she's a big asset to President Obama? I don't believe so. I believe she's not. I believe she is the Teresa Hines Carey of our time. I believe that every time Michelle Obama speaks, his ratings go down. I believe the more she's exposed, the lower his ratings. I'm saying that without any malice. I mean, just because she said she was never proud of America till her husband was shoehorned into the presidency, I don't hold that against her. Just because she sat in Reverend Wright's church for 20 years, I don't hold that against her.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Who are the Borgias of today? Who are they, actually? Well, you'll find out in the Savage Nation. And that ties into, do you think that the current administration is more or less corrupt than Bush or others in the past? Should I agree to an interview on CNN about my novel Abuse of Power? An unknown host has asked me to go on. And why do you think they want to interview me about my novel Abuse of Power? Here's what made it to michaelsavage.com. The solar energy corruption threatens to ensnare Energy Secretary Chu. Well, it's about time. What is he, above the law? Feds sold guns to drug gangs. My novel, Abuse of Power, debuts at number 4 on the New York Times bestseller list. Activists call for military to allow transgenders. The gay rights movement is not happy. They now want switch hitters, cross-dressers, sex change artists to destroy the military from top to bottom. New DOE loan favors even more Democratic donors. Massachusetts Muslim man planned to blow up the Capitol and the Pentagon with remote-controlled aircraft filled with explosives. Where does he get this from? Where did he learn this?
A Massachusetts man has been arrested for allegedly plotting to blow up the Pentagon and the U.S. Capitol building using remote-controlled aircraft armed with explosives. Rizwan Firdaus was arrested by undercover agents after they delivered materials he requested, including grenades, machine guns, and what he believed was 24 pounds of C4 explosive. According to a federal affidavit, Firdaus became convinced America was evil through jihadi websites and videos and began planning jihad against the U.S. in early 2010. In the months that followed, he contacted a federal informant and then began meeting with undercover federal agents he thought were members of Al-Qaeda. Firdaus allegedly planned to pack 3 planes with 5 pounds of explosives each and would use the rest to blow up bridges near the Pentagon. The plan also allegedly included an armed weapons attack by 6 people. According to the affidavit, Firdaus traveled to Washington in June to do surveillance. Firdaus made a brief court appearance on Wednesday and is expected back in court on Monday.
How did Pelosi's brother-in-law become number 2 at PCG? How did Obama give $737 million to a solar firm linked to the Pelosi clan? Obama's Euro crisis lecture was called pitiful and stupid, arrogant and absurd, according to German commentators and Der Spiegel. You may think he's a genius and a brilliant constitutional scholar, but apparently even the Euros, who have seen the hustlers before, I'm not impressed with Obama. No. Here's what they said. U.S. President Obama has given the Europeans a harsh lecture on the dangers of their ongoing debt crisis. They were so offended by his unsolicited advice that they suggested the U.S. get its own house in order first. Obama's remarks were arrogant and absurd, German commentators said on Wednesday. Really? I guess they're right-wingers. The mass circulation Bild writes, Obama's lectures on the euro crisis is overbearing, arrogant, and absurd. In a nutshell, he's claiming that Europe is to blame for the current financial crisis, which is scaring the world. Excuse me? They say the American president seems to have forgotten a few details. The most important trigger of the financial and economic crisis was U.S. banks and their insane real estate dealings. The U.S. is still piling up debt. The American Congress is crippled by a battle between the right and the left. The banks are gambling just as recklessly as they did before the crisis. The president's scolding is a pathetic attempt to distract attention from his own failures. How embarrassing. The left-wing newspaper, let's see, where's the left? Financial Daily. Let's see what the left-wingers say. Mass circulation Bild. The center-left Sudetische Zeitung writes, well, who cares what they wrote? The fact of the matter is they understand that he's out of his mind and a phony. Center-right Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung says, dark clouds have gathered over the American president. The gloomy state of the economy is putting a damper on Obama's future prospects. The optimism of the past is gone, replaced by a cheap search for a scapegoat. Obama thinks he has found one. He blames the Europeans for reacting too late to the debt crisis. But they say we Europeans are apparently taking on too little new debt to get out of the crisis. But we're already feeling the wonderful effects of borrowing too much money. Well, I guess they know what they're talking about. The biggest news of the day is another $1 billion in solar loans. The Solyndra director is tied to the new loan. Yeah, come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now. The Democratic donor companies got $500 million from the feds, and the crony capitalism story of the day, maybe of the decade, maybe of the century, is the almost billion-dollar loan benefits to Pelosi's brother-in-law. Beyond belief. Chavez rushed to the hospital. Really, what a loss that would be. I wonder what Sean Penn is going to do when his dictator buddy dies. You think Mini-Me will survive? All this and more on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
My family lived overseas. I lived in Indonesia for a few years. And my mother, she didn't have the money to send me where all the American kids went to school. But she thought it was important for me to keep up with an American education. So she decided to teach me extra lessons herself, Monday through Friday. But because she had to go to work, the only time she could do it was at 4:30 in the morning. Now, as you might imagine,
okay,
I wasn't too
President,
happy.
Mr. President, appreciate it. There's always a message and another message. On the surface, it's a Beatles song. Under the surface, there's other messages. And on the surface, there's a president speaking to school children rather nicely and kindly and benevolently. And he leaves out the fact that after he was a poor kid who couldn't go to school, he somehow went to Punahou High School, which is a very expensive private high school in Hawaii, which never comes up. How did that happen? How did he have no money and go to Punahou High School? That's left out of the narrative, but then everybody wants to make themselves into something different in order to tell their story. Lincoln walked to school 15 miles, whatever. Lincoln wrote with a quill, whatever. Lincoln freed the slaves. It wasn't about a trade war between the North and South. Lincoln was a great man. Lincoln wasn't a great man. Washington had false teeth. He didn't have false teeth. Jefferson was a good man, and Jefferson kept slaves. It depends upon what you want. It's a dualism duality. Dualism lives through all of us because that's why we're living east of Eden, because we're not God. And because we're not God, we are fallen. And because we're fallen, we're man. And because we're man, we're never going to be right. And although Humpty Dumpty had a great fall, Humpty could never be put together again. And therefore, we are living in an imperfect world, but it's getting worse, not better. And that's why you have to stay very tuned into what the politicians are trying to do to you. Because one thing you should know for sure, which is that when the Democrats and Republicans get along and they have a so-called bipartisan agreement, you can be sure to one thing, the American people are getting screwed royally. The object of a two-party system is to have vocal disagreements in the marketplace of ideas, not for them to be gentlemen from the aisle across the floor. Will the gentle lady from the gutters of the slums of Minneapolis please rise to put forth her rubbish so she can pull the wool over the people's eyes who put the comedian in power? Yes, I will, because it's the year of the woman, and the year of the woman is the year of goodness and kindness and wonderfulness, because we all know the woman is better than the man, and look what we have since the year of the woman. It's gotten better, much better, nicer and better. And there's Nancy Pelosi, who says no matter what the people want, they are louts, they are Nazis, they're no good, Nicks, and only I know what's good because I am the Queen of Diamonds, and I whispered in the ear of all of those who spoke before they had the strings put upon their wrists by Dianne Feinstein, the shopping cart lady who has not been heard from in a very long time. What's going in Washington? I don't know, dear. I don't pay any attention to politics. After all, it's all rubbish. They'll do what they want to do anyway. And he's just like all the rest of them. He's no more dangerous than Bush. He's not any different. Come on. You're a racist if you think he is. You're just against blacks. You know that. So don't you dare raise a voice of protest against socialism. What are you talking about? It's not socialism. What is socialism? Well, I don't know, but he's not a socialist. Well, how can you say he's not a socialist if you don't know what a socialist is? It doesn't matter what I know or I don't know. I just know that he's a good man, a nice man, and he is a man who's bringing us change. And all change is good change. All progress is good progress. All progress is good progress, and all change is good change. And so, therefore, anyone who opposes him is a mean right-wing racist. Just ask Reverend Wright. He's a man who knows what's right. That's why his name was Wright. He didn't get that name right because he's wrong. He got that name right because he's always right. And if the president sat and listened to him for 20 straight years saying that the white man did this, the white man polluted that, and Van Jones says that the white man put pollutants into the neighborhoods of the minorities, therefore, you are aboard with that because that's what's happening. That's the story. That's it. You don't need to know anymore. What you need to know is what they tell you to know. And so therefore, you got to read about the Khmer Rouge. You got to understand about the red scarves and how the nice little man went to Paris. He didn't mean any harm. He only wanted to make Cambodia a more fair place. He wanted change. Pol Pot was a professor. He wanted change for Cambodia. Now, he didn't know exactly how to bring about change because he was a little man, a little professor, a small-minded little professor at that. So he figured he'd learn big things in Paris. And because that's where all the intellectuals, all the intellectual giants, going back to Voltaire and before, they went to study in Paris, the land of liberté, égalité, fraternité. So the little man from Cambodia goes to Paris, and he gets indoctrinated with Marxism at the university in Paris. And he comes back and says, man, I'm going to bring about change to my country of Cambodia. Yeah, it's very, very bad, because we got poor here, and we got rich here, and there's a middle class, eyeglasses. There's the people who got educated in Hong Kong and they got educated in Paris. And they're no good because they make a lot of money and it's not trickling down to the poor. There's no trickle-down poverty here. So I'm going to make sure everyone's equal in Cambodia. But wait a minute, they're not going to listen to me. Now, what do I say to them? They don't want to give up their houses in Cambodia. They don't want to give up their houses to the poor. They're mean. Now, although we're one race, and because we're one race, I can't use racism, which I learned in the School of Theological Divisions in Paris. You know, try race where there's racial differential. Since there's no race to use in Cambodia because we're all one race of Cambodians, try using class warfare. Turn the poor against the rich. That's not working. Then take the amoral, brainwashed youth of Cambodia, give them an AK-47, put a red bandana on their head, give them a name called the Khmer Rouge, and tell them to go out and round up anybody with eyeglasses. And then you'll have a mountain of skulls at the end of the Marxist revolution, the change in Cambodia. Now, it can't happen here, I recognize that, because we have a country with checks and balances, and we have a CIA that's definitely not going to let that happen. We have an FBI that makes sure that wouldn't happen. And, well, although they didn't function recently because they're under attack by the Khmer Rouge inside the government in their own way, go after the CIA, make things up, say they did this, they did that. While they're protecting us, say they were fighting us. While they're protecting us, say they were killing us. While they're keeping our worst enemies from bombing airplanes in the sky, say they were trying to kill us. So neutralize the CIA so they can't unleash the documents about the individuals in the Obama White House who couldn't even pass a security clearance. Make certain that the CIA is neutralized, use the Queen of Diamonds to do it. And then go on a little further, make sure the FBI doesn't do anything except make sure they look at EEOC booklets and see how they can get advanced. And make sure that they're only looking into racism and homophobia, not really looking into terrorism, because that way they'll be safe on the side. And then create your own civilian national security force, bigger and better and wiser and stronger than the U.S. military. But that got subverted. Got subverted because the guy they had in place to build up that national security force, first they called him a green czar. What you don't know is that Adolf Hitler was an early green. You don't know that because you don't know history. Adolf Hitler came to power on many different platforms. You heard about the anti-Semitism, which is true, but you didn't know he was an overt socialist who was also an early back-to-nature man. That's why all the little boys in the Lederhosen marched in the woods together. The little boys, the Hitler Youth, they loved nature. The Edelweiss was so beautiful. The Edelweiss flowers up in the Alpine. I love the fatherland. And they marched in the Lederhosen, and they loved nature. They slept in the outdoors, and they had bonfires. And they loved the pine trees, and they loved the snow. And they were, therefore, the early Greens. And they were called National Socialists. And all they wanted to do was make a society of equals. Nobody would be different in Germany. In the new Germany, everybody would be the same. And guess what? It worked. Because that charismatic man from Vienna, he brought everybody together except those nasty Jews and the gypsies and the communists and the trade unionists. They had to go because they weren't like the others, and therefore they went. And the reason the economy got good is because they stole everything from the Jews, and they gave it to themselves, and therefore the economy looked like it was doing good. But one of the main things that Hitler used to bring Germany back from the ashes of defeat and the League of Nations reparations was great public works spending. Like all dictators, Hitler knew that the only way to make the people feel good was to put money in their pocket and give them jobs. And so he created great jobs. And they built the Autobahn with public funds stolen at that. Either you took it from the Jews, or you took it from the Poles, or you took it from the Czechs, or you took it from the Romanians, or you took it from whoever. But you used the money, you invented the money, you printed the money. Didn't matter how, the Deutschmark became stronger. And the Edelweiss smelled even better, and the snow got whiter. And the tablecloths got whiter in all the German homes. And the girls got blonder, and the people got brighter. And no one knew where the money was coming from. But it didn't matter that Jews were being systematically killed and beaten to death. It didn't matter that countries were being invaded. All that mattered was everybody was marching and smelling the Edelweiss, and the trickle-down economy was working because he was pumping it in through public works projects. That's how he rebuilt Germany. Public works projects. The subhumans didn't deserve medical care, and so therefore they got the medical care that they deserved, which was no medical care in the death camps, and so the others got the good, clean German medical care. Now, it's true that the others were subhumans and they could be of some use, so they were used in medical experiments in order to make certain that the good, clean German had good medicine, so they experimented on subhumans while they were alive, all sorts of experiments to see how it would work. And that's what happens when you bring about change in a dramatic revolutionary way. And in only a few short years, the new Germany arose and everyone was happy.
Savage.
We have now a guest who is trying to do something about the corruption in Obama's backyard, and he's former gubernatorial candidate and transparency advocate Adam Andjafeski. Adam, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's great to speak with you.
So, Adam, first tell us what's going on where you are and why the Savage Nation should even care about this. Is there anything really new about it?
Michael, the national audience should care about this because the National Democratic Party is holding Illinois out as a poster child for good government. They just elected our governor, Democrat Pat Quinn, to the national fundraising post for the entire party across the country. They're rewarding his horrific leadership. If the Illinois-based President Barack Obama wins re-election, the national taxpayer will be asked to bail us out of our fiscal nightmare. We've got $8 billion worth of unpaid bills in our current budget. We've got a pension liability that tops the country. They just hiked our income taxes last January by 67%. They still can't get caught up on their bills. And so if Barack Obama is reelected, the national taxpayer is going to be asked to bail Illinois out. And this is why the story of Illinois is so important.
Well, what have you actually been able to accomplish so far? And what do you think could be accomplished when this goes nationwide?
Well, our mission is to bring transparency to every single dime of spending in as real time as possible. And 2 weeks ago, on September 13th, we took a huge leap forward on our transparency mission, where we posted the pay and the pensions of virtually every single public employee at nearly every single level of Illinois government. We put it up there on our website at openthebooks.com. Your listening audience, Michael, they can take a peek and they can see exactly how much Illinois government costs. It's 7 million lines of data. It's $250 billion worth of government spending, and they can see all of this at openthebooks.com. Many people have asked the question around the country. They've asked it to me, is Illinois worse off than your own state? And it's a good question, but here's the frame. Your state capital is probably more corrupt than Washington, D.C., and your counties are more corrupt than your state capital, and the local units of government probably take the cake. It was true in Bell, California. We found that frame to be true in Illinois, and you won't know if it's true in your state till you open up the books. So I encourage you to come to openthebooks.com, take a peek and see what we've done for Illinois to peel back the opacity of government and help us bring this to your state and all 50 states.
Well, how bad are things in terms of transparency?
The people of Illinois have never had access to the public information on a timely basis. 70 to 80% of the local budgets are pay and pensions, and this information's been hidden behind the process, and it's very intimidating in Illinois, where you have to identify yourself, and it's a process that takes a bureaucrat to fulfill your request. It soaks up public resources, and It's been hidden behind the Freedom of Information Act request process. What we've done here is we've made that request in the Internet age, in the electronic age, we've made that request obsolete. So, for example, since 2004, there's been a City of Chicago employee who worked one day for the City of Chicago, but he was a union boss. He retired in 2004, and he's had a $158,000 a year government pension since 2004. He's already taken $1 million of pension funds off the table. If our transparency portal was up 5 years ago, 3 years ago, a year ago, people would have seen that this guy would have had the top pension in the last 10 years in the City of Chicago, and people would have been upset a long time ago and reined in those excesses. What transparency does, Michael, is it defends the hardworking taxpayer, but it also defends that hardworking government employee that doesn't have excessive compensation, that's paying into his pension fund, and the pension funds are being drained by the government, by the union elites out of the government's pension plan.
Okay, you mentioned what happened in Bell, California. We can only imagine what's going on in the Obama administration. Is it true that you found out that the former head of the NEA is getting a $20,000 plus monthly pension, the National Education Association?
Well, the difference between Bell, California, and Illinois is striking. Obviously, it was about a year ago, Michael, at this time when it was outed that the city manager was taking $800,000 of compensation. And 30 days after that was discovered, he was put into handcuffs and arrested for public embezzlement. Now, in Illinois, what we've broken from the information at OpenTheBooks.com is the second highest teacher pension in Illinois state teacher retirement history went to an elementary school teacher from the Chicago South suburbs that took a 12-year leave of absence. He goes to Washington, D.C. He becomes president of the NEA, the teachers union, and when he retires in 2008, he gets an Illinois government teacher's pension of $20,200 a month, predicated off his earnings in Washington, D.C., and not off his teacher earnings on the south side of Chicago.
You say that all of this is legal. What is legal and what shouldn't be legal?
Well, we've also determined that there are 34 union bosses that have had sweetheart insider access to the Illinois government's teacher retirement system. And these 34 union bosses clean off $338,000 a month in pension. So, Michael, that should be legal. Quite simply, government pensions should be for government employees and not for sweetheart insider union bosses and elites.
Has the midstream media covered your extremely important story so far?
Well, the three major newspapers in Chicago, obviously they endorsed in 2008 Barack Obama for president. We've had to fight for every little bit of coverage all around the state. That's why it's so important to break this story on your national platform, Michael. I appreciate it. It's a big story. The three Chicago newspapers still have not written a story about our portal. We've set a national precedence of transparency, and transparency is a foundation for good government. Obviously, Illinois ranks up there with most of the corrupt states out of the 50 states, and we've got a reputation worldwide that our number one manufactured product is corruption. And when the transparency portal shows up, the three major Chicago newspapers haven't written a story about it yet. It's striking.
Adam Andrzejewski, thanks for joining us on the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's great to speak with you today. This is a big story. Thanks for breaking this on a national platform.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
You know, there's a lot of people in the media, in the radio business in particular, who are crossing the line. They don't know who they are. You think Obama has a shapeshifter identity crisis. I can name three or four people in talk radio who are conservatives who have a bigger identity crisis than he does. If you took away a television camera from a few of them, they would go to pieces. They need to go into a mental hospital. If they ever turned the camera off on a few of these people or wrapped themselves in the flag, they would go to pieces. It's the same with the microphone. See, I'm lucky because I started at age 50. I had many other professions before this, and believe me, I have many other avocations. I could collect plants. There's things I could do with my life if I left radio, or if radio left me, or if the government turned off the mic, so to speak. But you can't say that about people with the flag that wrap themselves in the flag. You turn the camera off the hem, I guarantee the hem's in a nut house within 6 months. You turn the camera off Wolby, Wolby is in a nut house in 4 months. You turn the camera off corned beef, finished, over. They don't have lives, these people, in my estimation. But I do. I mean, I frankly do. Now, I'm getting to another point here. The point is this. The point is the fact that there are other lives other than the media. And I understand that. But here's the big problem. Many people in the conservative media, or the conservative side, if you want to call them that, and some do a good job. I don't know how much they believe in it. It's their business. I'm not here to second guess what a man believes in or doesn't believe in. Many of them have made the mistake of starting to think that they're Paul Revere or George Washington or Abraham Lincoln, and they want to be a congressman, or they get late at night and they can't sleep. They're jagged up from the TV, the camera. The makeup is causing an allergic reaction, and the wife doesn't want to be with them because they smell from the makeup or the hairdryer. So they lay awake and they think they're going to be a politician. They start imagining themselves another guy like the guy from Minnesota. I forget his name, the fat slob who failed on Air America, whatever his name is, the slob senator. Yeah, I know his name. The slob senator who no one ever heard of. He made a big, big splash, and now the slob sank to the bottom of the pool. No one hears from him anymore. But many of them want to be a senator, Senator Wallbanger. They dream waking up. And Senator Wallbanger, what do you have to say? And Senator Cornbeef, what is it you have? Or Senator whatever. So they're crossing the line. And it reminds me of a character. I got to tell you the character. Do you remember the movie with Al Pacino, one of my favorite actors? I don't care what his politics are. I really don't care. Very talented, very convincing actor. Do you remember the movie where he plays the guy who comes out of jail and Swine Penn plays the kinky-haired lawyer? I know Carlito's Way. I'm trying to get the audience, Phil, to think out loud. Carlito's Way, a great movie. So there's a kinky-haired lawyer played by Swine Penn who apparently was modeled so closely on a certain Harvard professor that the Harvard professor actually sued Swine Penn. I think the Harvard professor lost because it was so close to the sleazoid. Anyway, that lawyer character, the sleazy lawyer, played by Swine Penn, opposite Al Pacino in Carlito's Way. So Carlito's Way is about, he's a Puerto Rican character, was a heroin dealer, a big one, comes out of prison, and he wants to go straight. Tries to do it straight. And he ties up with the lawyer. He likes the kinky-haired lawyer because the guy got him out of jail or whatever. And there's a scene where the lawyer pulls out a gun on an Italian in a nightclub over a woman. He pulls out a .32 handgun. And then Carlito, the character, pulls him on his side and says, "You crossed the line, man. You a lawyer," he says to him. "You're not a gangster. You a lawyer." Don't you remember that scene? And that reminds me of a few people in conservative talk radio who have crossed the line in their own mind. They don't understand that they're just talk show hosts. They're not politicians. They're not senators. They're not congressmen. They're not going to be president. They're only talk show hosts, good, bad, or indifferent. And they've crossed the line. But one thing with me, because I know who I am, because I'm a little older and I've been around and I have had other careers, I absolutely know who I am. It's not all great. I have a lot of warts. Believe me, I have a lot of warts. I know exactly who I am. I know exactly what I'm capable of, what I'm not capable of. And I'm not capable, or nor do I desire ever to be a politician or a community activist or a community organizer or lead a riot in front of a city hall with a bullhorn. And a lot of people in talk radio don't know that. And so they become the Zelligs of our time. You got people who once were hidden in closets somewhere with computers who are now running around with bullhorns, breaking into offices, stealing files. They don't even know what they're doing. They have no idea which side of the law they're on anymore. And they've lost all conceptualization of what they're doing. They think because they have self-righteousness, they're not breaking the law, even though they are breaking law in some cases. And this is a very dangerous game for some of these people to be playing. I've told some of them that in subtle and unsubtle ways, but they don't listen to me or to anybody else. They're like children. They're having a lot of fun. They love the acclaim. They love the Klieg lights. They love the attention. But they have no idea that that they crossed the line. And like Al Pacino said, man, you crossed the line. You a lawyer. And I have one bit of advice to those of you in the media who are listening to me. You are a talk show host. You are a commentator. You are not a congressman. You are not a senator. And you will never be president.
There's some Republicans in Washington who said that some of this might have to wait till the next election. Some even said that if they agree with the proposals in the American Jobs Act, they still shouldn't pass it because it might give me a win. Think about that. Give me a win. Give me a break. That's why folks in Washington, that's why folks are fed up with Washington.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199. 800-255-4199 or go to AmericaIsRising.com. 800-255-4199. AmericaIsRising.com. I've told you what I wanted to say. I've laid it out for you as clear as a bell. I've given you my opinion on a couple of topics. I've asked a couple of questions. And now we're going to go to something a little lighter because I can't sustain this kind of a focus for hours and hours and hours a day. If you want to call me on this, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. I will tell you that living well is the best revenge. I mean, I can talk about lifestyle issues just to calm down a little bit because I do know how to relax. When I do go out, I know how to relax when I go out. And it's very rare. Maybe once a week I'll go out and, you know, I sit and relax. I have a bottle of wine. Actually, I'm drinking wine again. If you want to talk about alcohol, I mean, it leaves me with a hangover, but it feels good going down. Isn't that interesting? Why does wine, no matter what I drink, leave me with a hangover, but beer or vodka doesn't? It's an interesting phenomenon. I know the answer. It's the complexities, the fusel oils in wine. No matter what you get today, it's been tricked up in the winemaker's chemistry laboratory. They're not making wine the way. It's all like chemicals now, chemistry. But I had, Friday night after the show, I went over to Aliotta's. I hadn't been there in a while. And Richie prepared for me himself. He went in the kitchen. I mean, it's one of the busiest kitchens he ever seen. I remember when I was a kid, there was a restaurant in New York called Mama Leone's. And they used to turn out, I don't know, thousands of meals a night or something like that. And I used to marvel at it. I once read a book about how in the heck could anyone cook? So I try to cook a meal for a couple of people, and to get the bread and the meal and the everything on the table at once is very hard. So how do you do it for hundreds of people at a time over and over again? So every time I go in the kitchen of a very busy restaurant, I'm always awed by it, frankly, because it's amazing the skill it takes to produce everything to come out on time. So I ordered mussels marinara, which I got to tell you, there's no better mussels marinara in the world that I've tried than in that restaurant, Aliotta's. You say, well, why am I talking about it? Because I'm sick and tired of talking about the ACLU. I'm sick and tired of telling you what Obama's doing to America. I'm sick and tired of talking to myself and nobody else about being banned in Britain. The modern-day story of David versus Goliath. And I don't know how this ends. Don't you understand it's not over yet? Don't you understand that the story isn't over? It's an ongoing story. It's a work in progress. That's what I'm saying to you. You're a part of this history. So I can only sustain this for so long. So as I say, Friday night I went into the place. And I ordered mussels marinara and a bottle of wine, good bread. And frankly, I was happy to be left alone and sit at a table and look at people and just eat and drink. But the mussels marinara is a magic. I didn't even eat anything else. I will tell you, I brought home a hamburger for Teddy, and he ate it for three nights in a row. He loves it. The dog really likes his meat. No matter how you try to give him that kibble, they don't like it as much as they like meat dogs. The truth is they're pure carnivores. They go berserk. It's like children who are raised as vegetarians. You put a chicken leg around them, they'll attack it on the table. And speaking of attacking it, I have an assistant that works, two assistants. So one of the young ladies, my computer wasn't working. I asked her to touch the button on the computer for me. The dog attacked her hand. He didn't bite her. He mouthed her. The other assistant, the young man, if he comes in here, he goes after his feet. Teddy does not like anybody in the radio studio. This is, I don't know, they have these instincts. You can't get mad at him. I said, okay, Ted, they're friends, but he doesn't understand that. If anybody touches anything to do with my equipment or comes in the room, they're enemies. That's why they're wonderful. That's why they're loyal. That's why they're great. That's why they're not cats. That's why they're dogs. So what do you want to talk about? Food, mussels, marinara? You don't need Viagra. What do you want to talk about? Marinara sauce? You know, I should do a whole show on how to make a proper marinara sauce when you think about it. I don't like sweet sauces, but I frankly happen to know that even if people say there's no sweet, there is always a little bit in it. I prefer tart. Everything should be very tomato-y. And even though I said I was off tomatoes last week, I cheated. I went back on tomato sauce. I can't give everything. I realize. I thought about it over the weekend. I said, what, are you crazy? You're going to give up dairy? Okay, no big deal. Even though I love Parmesan cheese and Romano cheese and provolone. All right, I can give that up. I never liked milk. I don't eat ice cream. I can't stand it. But to give up tomato and tomato-based products, it's like, how can I do all of this at once? I mean, sure, maybe I'd be healthier in a certain way, but it's like a robot. I mean, who wants to live like that? What, just put oil in my joints? I saw a show on saints on the earth. They are doctors from, I think this Dr. Stein from the Los Angeles. I was watching TLC, and I saw them separating Siamese twins in America. These doctors are amazing. How do they do this?